coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK, the internet radio of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. I'm your host, Jamie Krieger. I am pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. At Resurrection, we have adult Bible study at 10 a.m. every Sunday while the children are in Sunday school. At 11 a.m., we gather for the Divine Service with Holy Communion. For more information about our congregation, go to resurrectionlutheran.org.uk. I'm also pastor of the Oxford Lutheran Mission. Pastor Tapani Simeoki and myself take turns to meet with the congregation there at 4:30 in the afternoon at St. Michael's and All Angels every second and fourth Sunday of the month. For more information about this, go to oxfordlutheran.co.uk. If you are nowhere near these congregations, go to lutheran.co.uk. This is the website of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, and it has information about all our congregations in England, Wales, and Scotland. I am also manager of Lutheran Radio UK. I hope you enjoy listening to our programs as much as we enjoy producing them for you. Find our entire schedule and the podcasts of all our programs at lutheranradio.co.uk. Welcome to today's episode of Worth Doing Badly, this weekly survey of the Bible readings for each Sunday of the church year. Today we will be looking at the lessons for the eighth Sunday after Pentecost. And the lessons are Deuteronomy 7, verses 6 through 9, the Psalm is 125, the Epistle lesson is from Romans chapter 8, verses 28 through 39, and the Gospel lesson is from Matthew 13, verses 44 through 52. And we will begin with the gospel lesson as you usually do. And here's our speaker, David Weber. David, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jamie. Eighth Sunday after Pentecost, obviously, is the longest season. And it gives us a chance to pay attention to smaller aspects of the Christian faith. And today, the Matthew passage is talking about the kingdom of heaven and getting us used to think of what it's like to have membership in two worlds. That's what Christians have. We have a foot in the kingdom of the primary realm of the seen, the physical world. And then there is the secondary realm, which is unseen, in the metaphysical world, which Jesus calls the kingdom of heaven. So interestingly, whenever we pray repeatedly, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, we expect to enjoy on earth, existentially, right now, to enjoy on earth the benefits of our membership in the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven isn't interested in paying death benefits, and, you know, somehow that it's irrelevant until we die. The kingdom of heaven, though unseen, is not unreal. And it certainly refuses to be irrelevant as people more and more are thinking of faith and heaven. So these parables on this eighth Sunday are helping us think about what it means to have metaphysical membership in this kingdom of heaven and how that would change our life in the primary physical world. And we're given three parables. The first parable is about a man who finds a buried treasure, which causes him to shake up his finances and buy a tract of real estate, probably overpaying for it. His actions had to seem loopy if you didn't know that the land had a hidden treasure. And of course, he was the only one. And then there's another parable. Follows up on this, of a man who discovers the precious pearl that he has been seeking for all his life. And after discovering this treasure, he sells everything in order to buy that pearl. And again, the man must have seemed irrational and out of touch in throwing his finances into utter chaos. Now, interestingly, Jamie, there is a hidden treasure in this text. which was fun to read, that the Greek word for pearls is margaritas or margaritas. And it's interesting that the drink is based upon loosely this particular text. So there's all sorts of these fun little treasures that come at us. So those are the first two parables. And in both of them, the main character seems to be out of touch, because what we don't understand or we don't see is the thing, the precious thing that each of the characters sees. So they seem to have lost their sense of value because these things are hidden. So the third parable talks about distinguishing between that which is worthy from that which is worthless. And of course, it's talking about fish, not treasures or pearls. So the wise fisherman knows which fish is marketable and which is catfish, cat food rather. And so this third parable then ends with a dark kind of aspect to this knowing the value of things. If in fact our two first characters had invested badly, they would have been deeply disappointed, and that disappointment is expressed in weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's how the Bible treats our lives, and lives that end in this kind of sadness and anger because we invested in the wrong thing. So the parables are not interested in our investment strategy. What they're interested in is having us appreciate why Jesus would sacrifice for us, and why Jesus' sacrifice now seems so irrelevant and irrational to people. It seems indifferent. It doesn't make any sense to even give it much attention. But the fact is that we are Jesus' hidden treasure. We are the pearl that he seeks. And so no sacrifice is too high a price to pay in order to get the things that he desires. And so the dark side of the text is that Jesus refuses to stop at anything to allow eternal souls to be disappointed and lose out on the satisfaction of our desire for eternity in the kingdom of heaven. So the text then will tell us, what is it like to be so highly valued by God, to be loved in this sort of way, to have Jesus see our eternal souls as having nothing more important, more relevant, more to be desired. So the psalm then says, it says that in trusting God, God gives earthly stability. Now, how can something like trust, which is unseen and to many seems unreal, how can that change our concrete world? And the psalm answers it is that humans live in a concrete world, but we really have this deep desire to be never shaken and settled forever, are the words of the psalm. Now, we know in the physical world there is nothing that is never shaken. There is nothing that is settled forever. And yet human beings universally desire these things. Human beings universally understand that the material world is not forever, and consequently the material world, if they reduce their lives to the material, will leave them deeply disappointed. Weeping and gnashing of teeth is the result. Sadness and anger. Human beings, according to the psalm, desire forever. And that cannot be satisfied physically. That on the physical level, we are headed for utter disappointment. The word forever is not real in the physical world, and yet we who use that word forever, and everyone uses it, especially when we're talking about love, we do not believe that that forever is in the physical world. and yet it is still something that we all desire. Sadly, some people give up on that desire, thinking that it can never be satisfied. So this is how the psalm would have us look at the reality of this desire for forever. We don't have it. We desire food because we don't have food, because we're hungry. We desire companionship because we are lonely. We desire forever because we want it, but we do not have it. Our desire is for more life, and by more, we mean it should go on eternally. And the psalm says this is the desire that God wills to satisfy. This is why God would stop at nothing to bring us into the kingdom that endures forever. It is not irrelevant. It is the most relevant thing that we can actually that we can ever experience. It is that which we don't have, but it's that which we deeply desire. Now, Deuteronomy takes us a little bit differently. And it says this, that we are a holy people, we are a chosen people, and we are a treasured people. So it's working out. What does it mean to be the object of Jesus's desire, like a hidden treasure and a costly pearl? And Deuteronomy says, here's the reason why we are. It's not because we have some merit. It's because simply we are his beloved. So, it makes a reference here. It says, when we are not seen as eternal beings, we become useful tools. And then the passage mentions about the slavery that Israel had to endure. You want to know what it is like to not be treated as an eternal being? It means that others will use you as a tool, and there is no more wicked of an example than one person enslaving another, or one nation enslaving other. It's the wicked, most wicked manifestation, because it's the devaluation of the eternal soul inflicted upon the body. So the way that Deuteronomy presents this is that here is our choice. We can give up on being loved by God, but then that turns us into nothing but physical tools to be used at the discretion of others. God counters this wickedness manifested in slavery by valuing us as holy, as chosen, and as treasured. And of course, then Jesus' sacrifice shows how this value is worked out in the incarnation, in which what he will do is spend everything to save the single eternal soul. And the Deuteronomy passage takes it a bit further. We are a chosen people, a holy people, which means that we are not only beloved by God, but that God wishes to love the world through us. That this love is not something we simply receive and it leaves us unchanged. No, to have this love is to be deeply a participant in the ongoing, in Christ's ongoing work in order to bring eternal souls into the eternal kingdom of heaven. So, Paul then takes us in a little bit different direction, and he makes so many wonderful claims in this passage from Romans. The one I will focus on here is all things work together for good. This concisely captures the universal human desire for a life that comes together rather than falls apart with weeping and gnashing teeth. You see, this is an article of faith. It's unseen. It's something that you trust. It's not physical, that all things work together for good. In fact, in the physical world, No things work together for good. All things are always moving towards death and always unraveling. And yet every human being wants to believe that even the bad things are working together for good. And Paul is going to make it clear why that belief is not fanciful, why it's not superstitious, why it's not hocus pocus, why it is possible to realistically believe that all things can actually work together for good. It's because Paul does not believe in death. It's not that he doesn't believe in dying. He knows that. He does not believe that death needs to leave us weeping and gnashing our teeth in sorrow and anger. Paul does not believe in death in the same way that all of us do not believe in death. When we suddenly recognize that we are dying, if we are given being told that we are terminal, we all respond the same way. I can't believe I'm dying. See, we don't believe in death. We finally submit to it, but Paul says don't give up on that disbelief in dying. To say I can't believe in dying is that I'm dying is the first step towards living, wanting to live forever, that desire. Death is unbelievable because the resurrection has in fact given us an alternative to it. To believe that all things are coming together because we are loved by God means that death is not what it seems in the physical world. There is no good material reason to believe that things are coming together in good, because everything material is falling apart. The only good reason to believe that things are moving towards the good is the belief that we are beloved by God, that Jesus would sacrifice everything because we are valued by him as a hidden treasure and an expensive pearl. Our identity is no longer mortal. Mortal is just the Latin word for death. Our identity is that we are beloved. And because we are beloved, Paul says we are summoned to live right now as people who are beloved. And people who are beloved by Christ, people who receive Christ's love, recognize that this love is good for others as well. So being loved means that our life cannot end in utter humiliation. It just can't, because we are loved, and the weeping and gnashing of teeth is rightly consigned to where it ought to be, in hell. This is not the end that Jesus would will for anyone. And so, as the texts say, he will pay the ultimate price. He will look like a lunatic in order to secure that hidden treasure and that precious pearl.
David, thank you very much for those precious insights. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in again today. We will be back next week here at this same time. Stay tuned for more. David, goodbye.
Goodbye.